Is the horror of the Holocaust repeating itself around the world with the rise of Islam and Sharia law? Join us as we talk about this on today's program.
Welcome to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review, featuring the best segments taken from our Stand in the Gap Today daily program. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth. Stand by to hear a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. The pastor's and the believer's goal should be to impact our culture for Christ. As part of our mission to urge pastors to boldly preach the whole counsel of God and equip people to be soldiers and ambassadors for Christ, we're establishing APN chapters in all 50 states. Learn more on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Now, here's our host and American Pastors Network President, Sam Rohr.
We're glad that you've joined us today as we'll be featuring a selection of segments taken from our August 9th Stand in the Gap Today daily broadcast. If you're new to this broadcast, the program of APN's Stand in the Gap Today, our daily news analysis program, is to highlight and bring clarity to the issues of the day from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Every concerned patriotic and Christian America would like Stand in the Gap Today as we ask and answer the toughest and most pertinent questions. While we know that the purpose of the pulpit is all about the gospel message, we also know that it is not limited to the gospel message alone and the winning of the lost, but also includes the command to equip the believer to be articulate ambassadors for Christ in an increasingly evil and godless culture. As preachers, we believe that making disciples is what the Great Commission is all about. The theme of today's program will focus on Islam, the number one ideological enemy of America, and the very present threat of Sharia law. Does history have any lessons that we can learn about the dangers of oppressive ideology that promises peace and prosperity but only brings corruption, deception, and violence to its people? Before we begin that discussion, however, we're going to begin this first segment with a look at a revealing list of 50 previous presidential advisors to George Bush I and II who signed a letter opposing Donald Trump. That letter warns that Trump is not to be trusted with the national security of our nation. Certainly, we know that his position on refugees and immigration have caused quite a stir among those not concerned about our national borders. Yet, shortly before this letter came out, 51 NSA employees referred to as the Dissident 51 firmly stated that Hillary Clinton is dangerous for the national security of our America because of the many things, including the release of the over 30,000 emails from her unsecured email server. So what's at work here? Who are these signatories working for? Is this just another strategic effort by the globalists and the establishment to attack a person who has become perhaps the greatest threat they've ever faced to their globalist and centralized power ambitions? Let's listen to this first clip with my host, David Kistler, and Dr. Gary Dahl.
Do you know who said this statement? In the end, remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. That comment Martin Luther King made many years ago, but the truth remains today unchanged. In segment two, we're going to discuss the modern-day risk of staying silent when it comes to the matter of encroaching Islam. We're going to bring in our special guest, IQ Arasuli, our geopolitical and Islamic threat expert, to discuss this issue. We're then going to move to the real threat of Islamic Sharia law and focus on that piece. Does Sharia bring life and peace? Or does it guarantee death and misery, as one congressional hopeful just stated? I'm going to ask the question as well, and we're going to consider it. Can Sharia coexist with the U.S. Constitution? Are we really at the point of either an either-or choice? We'll discuss this in segment three. And then in the last segment, we're going to continue with our guest. We're going to look at the Kaiser Khan episode that's really had an impact a little bit larger than life in this presidential race. We're going to get his opinion on the impact of his statement at the DNC and what really is behind that and what has come out following that. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening today to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr. I'm going to be joined today by David Kistler and Gary Dahl. And as I've said, we will have as our special guest IQ al-Rasuli. But for the leading issue of the day in this segment, Gary and Dave, I'd like to move to the breaking news, really, that reveals that there's a list of 50 signatories, previous presidential advisors to George Bush 1, George Bush 2, as they signed a letter opposing Donald Trump. Now, just a portion of what their letter said was this. They said, quote, "We are convinced that in the Oval Office, he, Trump, would be the most reckless president in American history," end quote. But Trump's campaign responded by saying this, a quote from Trump, quote, he denounced the signatories of these people who he said he deserved, quote, "They deserve the blame for making the world such a dangerous place," end quote. Now, I find, Dave and Gary, this statement by these 50 individuals to be most interesting because it was last week, I believe, that there were 51, interesting, 51 compared to 50, NSA employees referred to as the Dissident 51. That Dissident 51 came out publicly and put their names and their careers at risk by stating that Hillary Clinton would be the most dangerous individual for America because they know what she has done with those emails. They have them, and they know where they went and what she did because of it. So, Dave, I want to go to you first, just as we look at this piece of the equation. When you look at the list of names on the 50 Bush 1 and Bush 2, as I'm going to call it, signatories, and their comments as to why they are opposing Donald Trump, are there any things about that list of people and what they said that at all raises your suspicions?
Sam, there are. Let me just say this. They tend to be globalists in their mentality. They tend to be very soft with respect to Islam. So the fact that their names appear are troubling to me, but it's basically what you would expect. I'm going to side, Sam, with the Dissident 51. I'm going to put more stock in what they have to say in viewing Hillary as being a very dangerous possibility as president of the United States. Adding to that, Sam, I went last night and saw Dinesh D'Souza's new film, Hillary's America. A lot of stuff I already knew, but it was still a very eye-opening film. Sam, it is absolutely essential that this woman not become president of the United States. And those that made those comments about Trump are in the pocket of Bush 1 and Bush 2.
Well, that's very interesting, Dave. And I hopefully we'll discuss a little bit what's on that film and encourage people to go and see that. But you say very clearly their comments, because one of the things, Dave, I know on that letter, it did say most of those who signed their names on this recent letter here just yesterday also signed a letter saying that they were opposing Trump well early in the campaign before ever was a primary. So these people are already on the list really of saying that they weren't in favor. So there's something interesting. So I concur with you. Gary, let me go to you right next. And in this regard, when you look at that statement of this group, and in that letter, they do refer to Hillary Clinton, but it is a very, very, very tepid disapproval at best. Some of the signatories in that letter said they will endorse Hillary. They will work for her. But they're saying that they're trying to put together a middle of the road type of an effort to show how broad based the opposition to Trump is. But I want to raise that question to you because of their very soft or tepid opposition to Hillary. Does that continue, as Dave say, and raises another red flag for you that perhaps the globalists and the establishment folks are really the coordinators of this most recent letter?
Well, Sam, I think that it does. I think that that raises a great big red flag, as a matter of fact. And the thing that we need to take into consideration is that a lot of the people who have signed that letter and who worked along with George Bush the first and George Bush the second are really a part not only of the establishment, Sam, but of the new world order. And this is something that, you know, Donald Trump at least apparently seems to be standing against. And so obviously these people who are in favor of the New World Order, seeing that Donald Trump is against that type of a situation, they are obviously going to be coming out and saying, well, you know, we're not in support of him at all. But, you know, there's a practical side to this. Those people who have signed that particular letter, and there's a lot of them, we know them, they're household names, most of them. They are the ones, Sam, who've been involved in leading our government in the past number of years and have led us into the mess that we are in today. Hmm. So, you know, I think that itself is a red flag. Why would we even take into consideration what they're saying when under their leadership, we've gotten into the mess that we are in today worldwide?
Yeah, Gary, I think that's a great point. Dave, I saw one of the name, a couple of names on there were former CIA folks. But if you go to Benghazi and Hillary, we've talked about it here. When the congressional committees held their hearings, even Trey Gowdy's committee, the one interesting folk that they didn't invite to testify were the CIA directors. And the word is because of their implicit development or involvement with Hillary in Benghazi and the whole strategy in the Middle East. What do you think about that?
Well, Sam, I think that's very, very telling. You know, I think our listening audience needs to understand that even with respect many times to the CIA and other security agencies of the United States of America, these folks get in bed with certain politicians, and their commitment often, tragically, is more to that politician than it is to the truth and even to the security of the United States of America. So, Sam, I think this may be reflective of that.
All right, Dave and Gary, thank you so much for the comment here today. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. And we're going to go in the second segment now. We're going to kind of continue along this theme somewhat. We're going to bring in our guest, special guest, IQ Arasuli. He's our world-renowned expert, I would say, on world religions, specifically Islam, and author of Unveiling Islam. And we're going to pick up on this theme here, the statement by Martin Luther King. In the end, remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Are we running out of time, friends, by not speaking up?
We just listened to a portion of our daily program where my co-host and I discussed the recent warnings on both sides of the election regarding national security. Indeed, the security of a nation is critically important. The Bible tells us in Romans 13 that government should be the power to suppress and punish evildoers. It goes without saying that no one who supports evil should ever be in a position of leadership, and anyone who does so and puts them there is beyond foolish. This next segment will focus, though, on a history lesson from Nazi Germany. Whether it's a lack of understanding or an unwillingness to believe the truth, those who don't consider Sharia law to be a threat to America's way of life should listen to what those who have lived through the Holocaust have to say. Joining us will be IQ Arasuli, Iraqi exile, author, speaker, and expert on Middle Eastern religions, specifically Islam. Now let's listen in.
Are we witnessing a repeat disaster in America and around the world? What I mean by that is this. First, it was communism, then Nazism. Is it now Islam and Sharia? We're going to discuss this now with the whole issue of, in the end, remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. IQ Arasuli, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today.
Thank you for having me, sir.
IQ, we are going to bear down on this issue of Islam in this segment with remaining silent and the cost. And then the next go-around, we're going to talk about Sharia specifically. But I got a hold of a letter that was written by an individual named Dr. Emmanuel Tanya, a well-known, respected psychiatrist. He said his family was a German aristocracy prior to World War I, was involved in industry and so forth. And he said this, quote, "Very few people were true Nazis. Many enjoyed the return of German pride. Many more were too busy to care. I was one of those who just thought the Nazis were a bunch of fools, so the majority sat back and let it happen. Then, before we knew it, they owned us, and we had lost control, and the end of the world had come. My family lost everything. I ended up in a concentration camp, my factories destroyed. Yet we're told again and again by experts and talking heads that Islam is a religion of peace, and the vast majority of Muslims just want to live in peace." He goes on to say, "Although this unqualified assertion may be true, It is entirely irrelevant. It's meaningless fluff meant to make us feel better and meant to somehow diminish the specter of fanatics rampaging across the globe in the name of Islam. I will not read the rest of it, but he did talk about in Russia when the communists took over, they murdered about 20 million people, but most of the people wanted to live in peace. The majority were peaceful, but that was irrelevant. China's huge population, when the Chinese communists took over, killed a staggering 70 million people. But the majority wanted peace, but they were irrelevant. The Japanese, the same. In Rwanda, the same. History lessons, he said, are often incredibly simple and blunt. We often miss the most essential. It's not a matter of do you want peace. It's a matter of are you speaking up before it is too late. I thought that was a great reminder and IQ. I want to go to you and ask you, why does there remain such a quietness among those who say they are Muslim, but they also will see their Muslim family or friends blown to pieces, properties destroyed, and chaos created? Why do they, who are a part of the mentality ideology, why are they being quiet? Then I want to go and ask you the next question. Why are those who are non-Muslims being quiet? But answer that first one, if you could, please.
First of all, there are two types of Muslims who are quiet. Those who are actually aiding and abetting the jihadi Muslims, the terrorists. This I call what the news media call moderate Muslims. Or silent majority Muslims. Actually, these are the stealth jihad Muslims. They are the ones who supply the terrorists with armaments, with money, with security, with shelter, and everything else. And then there are other Muslims who truly believe that these other, the jihadi Muslims, are not doing what the Quran is supposed to do, to tell them. They are completely ignorant of their own books. You can laugh about this subject, but it's true. Out of 1.5 billion Muslims, 1.2 billion cannot read or speak Arabic. They listen to the imam to tell them, and the imam lies to them. ISIS is the most perfect Islamic entity. I said it before, I repeat it again. While Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda followed the Quran word by word, ISIS, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Hezbollah, Hamas, follow the Quran letter by letter, comma by comma, and dot by dot. They are the most perfect Islamic entity. So I answered you regarding the Muslims. Regarding the non-Muslims, what do we have? We have 60 to 70 years of indoctrination in the education system in America, in Europe. This is a fact. Left-wingers have been educating our young generations not to be nationalistic, not to love their country, to believe in globalism, to believe that everybody is equal. Everybody is not equal. Our fingers were created unequal. There is a reason. Unequal doesn't mean that I'm superior to you. Yes, I can be superior to you in, let's say, in mathematics. I can be superior to you or somebody else in music. Under the law, every human being is equal irrespective of color, religion, or race. But outside the law, we're not equal. Each one of us has got some kind of superiority compared to the others. What I mean by superiority, more adept at doing something than somebody else. We're not equal. If we were all equal, there would have been no productivity, by the way. None. Mm-hmm. None. We couldn't have existed if we were all equal.
Let me jump in and just ask you a quick question. I don't know if you are following the Olympics, but to my knowledge, this is the first time the U.S. Olympic team has ever had a Muslim on the Olympic team that wore their hijab. And the young lady's name is Ibtijah Muhammad. And yesterday... Yes, well, she won her first match, and she took opportunity after that victory to literally blast the United States for its Islamophobia and other things. She said, "I feel unsafe in America all the time. She talked about the shootings in North Carolina. She talked about the incredible rhetoric addressed to Khazir Khan at the DNC by Donald Trump. She said this, and I'm quoting, "It's ridiculous as we as a country have to change, and I feel like this is our moment." My question to you, IQ, is this. Is this young lady the consummate example of Takiya? And what I mean by that is this. She has worked all of her life to get to this platform. Now that she is an Olympian, she is using her platform not as a way to display her gifts athletically. She's using it as a platform to promote Islam.
Absolutely right. The fact that she is wearing the hijab means she follows Sharia. The fact that she follows Sharia, she could never, ever be loyal to the American people or the American Constitution. And I tell you something, Pastor. There is no human being on planet Earth and no intelligent life outside the solar system who can debate with this subject and win. It cannot be done. Not because I say so. She is stupid. As an American, she has been given a chance to thank America, to thank the American people. There is no Islamophobia, by the way. Islamophobia doesn't exist. Why? Because Islamophobia is based on the fact it's based on irrational fear. Since Muslims want us dead, being afraid of Islam is not irrational, it's totally rational. So she, as you said earlier, she used her place to promote Islam against the United States of America.
IQ, you know, it's interesting as we look across the world that it appears as though that there is a greater frequency of worldwide occurrences from the Islamic Jihad. And, you know, many, I think, within the Muslim faith would probably be fearful of Donald Trump becoming the president of the United States of America. So putting those two concepts together, do you think it's possible that between now and the election in November here in the United States of America, that we may see a greater worldwide increase in jihad activities? And if that's the case, what is it going to take us here in America, as well as around the world, to wake up on these issues?
Maybe an atom bomb, maybe a gas warfare or bacteriological warfare. Why does it have to take you so long? I don't get it. I understand that in Europe, where 10% of the population now, almost 10% of the population is now Muslim. In America, it's 3-4%. By the way, Islamic Jihad has nothing to do with Trump. Before Trump was even thought of, they were killing people. Our listeners have got to understand something. I know it sounds egregious. I know it sounds repulsive, but it's a fact. Every single Muslim, and I say Muslim because they believe in Quran and Muhammad, every single Muslim is a potential mass murderer, every single one of them.
That's interesting. That is very interesting.
Because it's a fact. What do they believe in? They believe in the Quran and they believe in Muhammad's Sunnah. Quran and Sunnah are the pillars of Sharia. What does Sharia say? Sharia says that humanity has three choices. One, to convert to Islam whether they want, like it or not. Two, to submit to Sharia in humiliation and degradation forever. And if you don't want these two or refuse these two, to be exterminated. These are their words, not mine, ladies and gentlemen. Wake up, for God's sake. It doesn't take much to wake up.
IQ, you hit the point. That's exactly what we're asking in this segment, and that's what Martin Luther King said. We're going to be remembered by our silence. To wake up means to do something. You've said to some degree why Muslims themselves are quiet, and that's what the article I read from the fellow in Germany said. But why do you think across the leadership of Europe and in the United States there is such fear in raising a voice and saying Islam is not compatible with Western law, or that Islam is the Quran? Why do you, as an observer, look at that and say, why don't you ask the question, why don't people wake up? And I'm asking you, why do you think people are not waking up?
First of all, the reason the elitists who are the leaders of Europe are not because they're not waking up. They don't know how to handle it when they say it. To give you an example. Supposing I'm Prime Minister of France, and I tell the French people that every Muslim is a potential mass murderer. And
IQ,
have 7 million Muslims.
Hold that.
What do I do
hold that. IQ, hold that. We got a break coming up. I'm going to let you finish that question at the beginning of the next segment. I want to hear that answer in detail. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr, David Kistler, and Gary Dahl today with our special guest, IQ Al Rasuli. We're going to answer that question when we come back after the break, and we're going to go into specifically about Sharia. Is it an either or? Can it coexist with our Constitution or not?
We're glad you're listening to today's Stand in the Gap weekend. Did you know that the American Pastors Network produces not only Stand in the Gap today and Stand in the Gap weekend, but also a one-minute program carried on over 200 stations nationwide called Stand in the Gap Minute? Here's the program from last week. I hope that you enjoy this important challenge. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network with another timely Stand in the Gap Minute. Psalm 33:12 says, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." What a provoking reminder and challenge to the citizens of the United States. In this verse, blessed means happy, prosperous, level, or straight. In our modern language, this means predictable, honest, and not given to wide moral swings. The nation whose God is the Lord of the Bible will be physically secure, with even their enemies being at peace with them. What they touch prospers, and their wealth increases. The nation whose God is the Lord will be like a shining city on the hill, marked by justice and a refuge for the downtrodden. The natural conclusion of this principle is that since our nation is enjoying none of these blessings, our nation's God must no longer be the Lord. Is your God the Lord? The American Pastors Network, pastors preaching the truth, equipping people to impact the culture for Christ. Visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net to find out how you can help. Friends, you've just heard a discussion on the dangers of Islam and Sharia law with a closing question now being directed to IQ Avrasuli asking him this: why aren't people waking up to the serious threat? In this next segment, he'll answer this question and explain why, for non-Muslims, Sharia law equals death. You might be wondering what this has to do with being a Christian and asking why we should stand so firmly against the spread of Islam. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a German Lutheran pastor, theologian, and anti-Nazi dissident who eventually lost his life for his beliefs, said this, quote, "Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act," end quote. The church must not be silent on that which threatens our freedom to worship God, to share the gospel, to raise our children according to the Bible, and to live peaceful and productive lives. It's clear that the teachings of Islam and Sharia law are antithetical to the Word of God, and if not repudiated, will take away our freedoms and turn our religious liberty into horrendous persecution. It is imperative that, as God's people, we understand this and support those for office who understand this danger and will, with courage, defend our civil liberties.
Welcome back. And IQ Rasuli, we're going to go back to you and let you finish answering that question that was posed to you before the break that you were beginning to wax eloquent on.
Well, people have got to understand that Sharia is the nemesis of every constitution known to mankind, because every constitution made by man is not from Allah. And hence, since it is not from Allah, it does not submit to Sharia. Now, the young lady who went and on a speech against the United States of America, somebody should have asked her, all the verses of the Quran are against every human being who is not a Muslim. So what are you saying? You're pretending you are the victim. Why are you the victim? You're not a victim. Muslims have never been victims throughout 1,400 years of history, by the way. Never. They were always the victimizers, starting with Muhammad. The history is written down. It's not a hidden agenda. It's all available for people who want to read. If you don't want to read, you don't want to study, well, that's another story. What can I tell you? But it's all there. It's all available. All I said many times, Google Al-Quran. Don't buy it. And read the first 9 chapters. Only the first 9 chapters, nothing else. You'd be surprised that you will not ever come to any conclusion other than mine. That Sharia... Sorry, go on.
That's okay. You've made that very, very clear, and I want you to dig in a little bit more on that. Just yesterday, there was a Paul Whelan today. It's an election running against the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, and I think Paul Ryan's going to win, but we're not going to go there right now. There was an interview with his opponent in which the interviewer asked him a question about his statements about Sharia, and said, how can you dare say that it's not a matter of peace? And he ended up by saying, I'm telling you, Sharia equals death. And then I'm going to pick up and I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to ask you, fill that in a little bit. Would you agree that the Sharia 100%. Component of Islam is perhaps the most dangerous component, and does it equal death? That's a bold statement, but does it equal death?
Of course it does. I mean, you don't need to be a genius. You read, I said, all you have to do is read the first 9 chapters of the Quran. It will take maximum of 3 hours. Every single verse in these 9 chapters attacks every human being who's not a Muslim. So I want to ask people who are listening, since the Quran condemns every human being who is not a Muslim and calls them kafir, means infidel, subject to death and destruction, how is it possible that Sharia is compatible with anything? Hmm. How? I mean, on what basis? You know, we get sometimes Christians or Jews, they ask me the question, but the Bible is full of violence. I said, yes, the Bible is full of violence. But show me a single verse in the New Testament and a single verse in the Hebrew Bible inciting the followers of Jesus or the followers of Moses to exterminate, rape, plunder, and murder those who are not of the same following. They don't exist. There isn't a single verse. But in the Quran, hundreds upon hundreds of verses, both in the Quran and in the Hadith, do exactly that. So it's not compatible. It's not even negotiable.
You know, it's interesting.
People don't want to spend time to read. That's all. Mm.
Yep. You know, it's interesting, IQ, and of course, you know, many times you've indicated that it's important that non-Muslims read the Quran, and we support that 100%, and we encourage people to do that. We've talked about the fact that Islamic Sharia and Western law, you know, can really not peacefully coexist within the same government. We've talked about that. But let me ask you this question I think maybe a lot of our listeners are wondering as well, and that is this. With so much proof that Islam and Sharia and jihad is dangerous to the Western world, is dangerous to the non-Muslim, and has a threat on non-Muslims, why have so many people turned a blind eye to it? And why do so many people say that Islam is a religion of peace? Why do you think those two conditions exist in the world today?
Okay, we were discovering, interrupted with the advert. There are two levels. The elitists do not know how to handle Islam. As I said, if I'm Prime Minister of France and I tell the French people, look, we have 6 million or 7 million Muslims, none of them will ever be assimilated, and they're all traitors. What will he do then? The other item is 60 years of indoctrination by our education system, by the left-wing people, by the liberals, that everybody is equal, that nationalism is hateful, that you cannot be proud of America, you cannot be proud of France. Well, you know, 60, 70 years of generation after generation after generation being indoctrinated in this, it makes them completely useless mentally to stand up and be counted. It's not a joke, honestly. This is ingrained. For people who are listening, I'll give you one single verse. One single verse. I can give you 100 verses, but I'll give you one single verse. Chapter 5 in the Quran, called Al-Ma'idah, verse 51. And the verse says, O you who believe, Muslims, take not the Jews and the Christians for your friends and protectors. They are but friends and protectors to each other. And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them for friendship is of them. Ladies and gentlemen, the implication of the last sentence is of immense importance. Why? And I repeat it. And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them, the Jews and the Christians, for friendship is of them, means that any follower of Muhammad who befriends or is under the rule of Christians or Jews, or in fact any non-Muslim group, would be considered apostates to Islam, outsiders to Islam, enemies of Islam who must be slaughtered. In a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen, no Muslim in the United States of America or any non-Muslim country can ever be loyal to the American Constitution because it is man-made, not from Allah's Sharia. Nor can any Muslim in the USA be a loyal citizen because non-Muslim Americans are called infidels, kuffar, unbelievers, kafirun, to be either subjugated or exterminated. That simple, not complicated.
IQ, let me ask you this, and the statement you just made is a perfect segue into my question. Yesterday, Hillary Clinton spoke in Orlando, Florida. She drew about 3,000 people. It was an open-door event. And as she was speaking, right there behind her, off her left shoulder, was the father of the Orlando nightclub shooter, Omar Mateen. The father's name is Sadiq Mateen. He was there, IQ, waving an American flag, showing obvious support to Hillary Clinton, even though Mrs. Clinton made a statement about the horrific nature of the slaying there in the nightclub committed by his son. Now, my question to you, based on what you just said, what does his presence at a Hillary Clinton campaign rally say about him, and what does his presence at that rally say about her?
Well, her, she's useless, 100% guaranteed. She has always, like Obama, bent backwards when it comes to Islam. She is supported by the Muslim Brotherhood. She is supported by CARE. By the way, that young girl, the one with the hijab, she was completely programmed by CARE to do exactly what to, and to say whatever she said during after the Olympics or during the Olympics. This is no question about it. He was really waving the flag. I can wave the flag. I'm from Iraq. In Iraq, Saddam Hussein, he wanted to have, let's say, a demonstration. His soldiers would go around and collect maybe 100,000 people. Do you think there would be a single one of them would say no? The answer is no. They'll kill them. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton will kill anybody, but she can buy them. She can pay money. This guy waving the American flag doesn't mean squat. He is using taqiyya. You know what taqiyya is? Taqiyya is Islamic subterfuge, sanctioned by the Quran, sanctified by Allah. It tells the Muslim, when you are among non-Muslims, you can pretend you are part and parcel of the community. But when such a time comes when you Muslims are a strong majority or strong minority and take over, you show your true blood. It doesn't mean anything. She was wearing the hijab. The fact she was wearing the hijab is enough. By the way, they tell you, everybody tells you that the hijab is part of their religion. Absolutely not true. $200,000 I give now to any human being who can find the word hijab anywhere in the Quran denoting the covering of a woman in any way, shape, or form. $200,000. There are 1.5 billion Muslims, and there are 500 million supporters of Islam. That's 2,000 million people. You won't find a single one to take a dime.
IQ, let me come back with you in the remaining moments here in this segment. If we, as we've said, you've said, it cannot, Sharia cannot coexist with the Constitution. There are people who think that maybe they could. There really is an either-or choice, is it not? And I want to go in and ask you, what types of public policy should there be put into place here in America, in Europe, relative to pushing back on the Sharia? Because it is making strong inroads.
Well, I don't think you would like to be, you want to hear the truth. First of all, let's get this straight. In Muslim countries, they don't allow a single church to be built. No synagogue, no temple, no Hindu temple, no Buddhist temple. Not a single one in any of 57 Muslim majority states. And yet we, in Europe and America, because we are such democracies, we are willing to commit suicide. Sorry, I disagree with that.
We need
draconian law.
All right, IQ, going to have to hold that. I'm sorry, we've got a break here right now. Stay with us for this last half, and we're going to come back in the next segment, and we'll clean that up here. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with IQ Al-Rasuli, and we're going to pick up on where we just left off, and we're going to talk a little bit about Kaiser Khan and why he and that whole episode seems to have had such an impact And we're going to tie that into Donald Trump and some things that are concerning with him and Khan, and get IQ's input on what Trump can do to improve his comments.
At the American Pastors Network, we urge pastors and Christian parents to seek a Christian education for their children, not as a preference, but a conviction. Whether in homeschool or Christian school, a Christian education is essential if we ever hope to raise godly children and change the culture for Christ. That's why on this program and our Stand in the Gap Today program, we are glad to partner with BJU Press, the nation's largest provider of K-12 Christian curriculum. Academically excellent, biblically sound, and historically accurate. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. Welcome back to Stand in the Gap Weekend. I'm Sam Rohr, and today we've been talking about the dangers of Islam and Sharia law. Now, in this final segment, we're going to consider some very practical advice on how you and I can push back on the advancement of Islam. IQ Al-Rasuli helps us to understand that Islam is not a religion. Rather, it's a cult that incites people to violence and oppression. Let's hear what he has to say in closing.
Welcome back, and we're going to continue here in the closing portion of this program with our guest, IQ Al-Rasuli. And IQ, I want to go back to where we were interrupted by the break there and ask you this question. We have said here today on this program about the idea that too many people are remaining silent. I asked you the question earlier, why are Muslims remaining silent in the face of themselves being killed by jihadists? Why are non-Muslims remaining silent and the threat? We talked about Sharia, and you made it very clear, as we have said here, that Sharia and the Constitution are absolutely incompatible. The idea that you can actually take a little bit of Sharia and a little bit of the Constitution and enjoy a happy marriage is absolutely impossible. And then I concluded last segment, and I want to go back there now to you and say, all right, we've got America where Sharia has been winding its way in. We have Europe, Western world, where the Sharia has been winding its way in and through the fabric of it. There are many, as we've talked about, who do not want to stand up and identify Islam as a problem. There's a Donald Trump who's been pounding in the hole, and the people are really upset at him for being too rough and brush. I want to go to you now, flesh it out a little bit to me, because some have said we ought to shut down mosques. Trump has said you got to at least shut the border until we find out what's going on. From a policy perspective, once Sharia and Islam has found its way into the fabric of a culture, ours, here, Europe, as they have, and we're seeing things begin to happen, how do you recommend from a civil government perspective, a church perspective, that this is, in fact, how do we push back? Can you be specific on that?
100% I can be specific. Every European law and in the Constitution of the United States of America, any group of people who publicly incite against another group of people is illegitimate. Do you agree with me? It is illegal. It's criminal. But do you agree with me? I mean, this is part of the Constitution. You can't discriminate, let's say, against gay people. You can't discriminate against Catholic people. You can't discriminate against black people because they are black. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, you are correct. They have standing as an individual before the law. Yes, go ahead.
Correct. Everybody is equal. But Islam is not equal. Islam is a different entity. First of all, Islam is not a religion. Why do I say it's not a religion? Because their God, Allah, is not the same as the God of the Bible. Doesn't matter how many times they tell us their Allah is the same as the God of the Bible. It has absolutely nothing to do with the God of the Bible. This is why Islam is a cult belief system. It's a cult system. It's not a religion. And what does this cult system teach in the mosque? Hatred. Hatred of whom? Hatred of the very Americans the Muslims live among. Hatred of very Europeans the Muslims live among. Look what's happening now in Germany. Erdogan of Turkey tried to overthrow him, according to what he said. It's not true. But nonetheless, he has taken care of 55 to 60,000 people, and he wants to institute death penalty. Mm-hmm. 67% of the Turkish people in Germany support Erdogan, not Germany. They're not loyal to Germany. The Muslims in France, they're not loyal to France. The Muslims in England, they're not loyal to England. And the Muslims in America, they're not loyal to America. Because a Muslim can only be loyal to Ummat Muhammad. That means the other Muslims in the world.
IQ, you bring something up very interesting there as it relates to Germany. When we look back into the 1930s, when Adolf Hitler was trying to overtake Germany, of course, we know that he did, and he did it very, very rapidly, very rapidly. And he did it then because a lot of the Christians and others were very, very quiet. But, you know, he himself had an insight into Islam. There is one particular point in the early days of his administration there where he said something like this. He said, "Why do we have to be Christians? Why do we have to be so meek and mild like Christians? Why cannot we be firm and harsh as Muslims are?" You know, he saw something in Islam back in the 1930s when he was taking over Germany that many people do not see today. In other words, we are talking about the fact that so many Christians are quiet. We won't wake up. We won't stand up. We won't speak out. And yet you've got Islam that is mean and harsh and has jihad and sharia and wants to destroy the whole rest of the world. You know, it's time that we as Christians take heed and stand up and speak the truth and stop being the kind of people that just lie down, as it were, and allow Islam to run over us. In other words, what we are seeing today taking place in the United States with Christians being quiet is what Adolf Hitler saw or made a statement about back in his day in 1933. Do you see any comparison, or would you like to make a comment on that?
100%. In my chapter 42, the reason I mention it, because you can Google it, it's free of charge, you don't have to buy my book. Chapter 42, I compare verses from the Quran, and they are identical to the verses that Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf. Mein Kampf, by the way, is a German word, means my struggle. The Quran is based on jihad. What does jihad mean? Struggle. They are identical. Check them. Chapter 42, IQ Rasuli. You can Google it. It's free of charge. So I'm not charging you any money. I don't give a damn about your money. I want you to be educated. In chapter 42, I'll compare verses from Muhammad's Quran and Hadith, and they are exactly the same thing as verses in Hitler's Mein Kampf. Fascism and Islamism are identical. Identical, not the same, identical. Of course he loved it. He loved Muhammad. He considered him a warrior. And he considered the German people to be warrior people. Yes, you're absolutely right. In 1933, that's exactly what he believed in.
IQ, let me jump in and ask you this very, very quickly before we have to end the program. We've cited a couple examples today of what you referred to and defined as taqiyya. We talked about Khazir Khan. We talked about Sadiq Mateen. We've talked also about this young lady who is on the U.S. Olympic team wearing her hijab. What can we do? What can the average American do? What can the Christian do to push back against not just the taqiyya, the deception for the sake of advancing Islam? What can we do to push back against the onslaught, the encroachment of Islam in America?
Two things. Read the first 9 chapters of the Quran and support Donald Trump. Simple, not complicated. It takes you 2.5 to 3 hours, big time. Read the first 9 chapters of the Quran and support Donald Trump. You can't
go wrong. That was IQ. That was about as simple as it could possibly be, right, Sam?
Well, it was IQ, and I thank you for making some of those things. If I could summarize a little bit, as we've talked about today, here in this last segment, you made very clear Islam is not a religion. We have made the connection that Islam is equivalent to and part and parcel with Nazism, Mein Kampf. It's the struggle. It's what it is all there. That's what it is about. We've made very clear on this program that to remain silent in the face of all that we see will mean the loss of our freedom, the loss of America and the Western world as we know it. IQ al-Rasuli, thank you for making these points clear and confirming from an expert's perspective on these truths.
Thank you for being with us today.
Yes. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. And we encourage you to go to our website, standinthegapradio.com. You can pick up this archive as well as the programs before. Listen to this and our other 3 programs. Invite your friends to listen and share. These things we're sharing with this are not for our edification only. This is for, we want to get out the truth. We're all about standing in the gap for truth, ladies and gentlemen. We wish you and encourage you to stand in the gap for truth where you are. Until then, be with us tomorrow, 23 hours from now.
You've been listening to the Stand in the Gap weekend program featuring selected sections from our August 9th Stand in the Gap Today broadcast. IQ al-Rasuli was our special guest, and if you'd like to learn more about him, you can visit his website at alrasuli.com. If you've ever listened or have never listened to our daily program, but would like to find out how you can, please visit our website at standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. There you can listen live daily from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time right on our website, or you can look for a station there in your area. And we also have a one-minute program called Stand in the Gap Minute, which is a daily reflection on spiritual truth designed to help you in your walk with God. All 3 programs, Stand in the Gap Minute, Stand in the Gap Today, and Stand in the Gap Weekend, can be found at standinthegapradio.com. Just click on the name of the program you're interested in to access the archives. Friends, APN is unique among all Christian ministries across America because to us, pastors are not a means to an end. They're our focus because they're God's focus and the one ordained position of authority commanded to preach the Word. We at APN know that the days are urgent. We don't have time to continue chasing the symptoms of a broken culture, so we focus on preaching and applying the truth of God's Word to the 3 biggest problems facing our nation: broken homes and dysfunctional families, oppressive government and arrogant rulers, and a powerless church with silent pulpits. Only renewed pulpits can fix the spiritual problems of America, and it must be now. Our time as a nation is fast running out. Can you help us with an immediate tax-deductible gift? One immediate need is for funds to launch 5 new State Pastors Network chapters. Committed pastors are ready to go in 5 states, but we need more financial assistance. $7,500 is needed to launch a state chapter. Can you help with part or all of that amount? Just go to our website at standinthegapradio.com and then to the donate button. Then lastly, I invite you to join with us in a powerful initiative just launched by the APN called We Will Stand. Simple but powerful, this effort invites America's pastors, church leaders, and all true believers to intentionally and faithfully stand together for biblical truth in the public square. To sign up, go to standinthegapradio.com and click on the We Will Stand tab in the upper left-hand corner. I pray that I will hear from you today. This is Sam Rohr asking you the question. Until next time, will you stand in the gap for truth with us this coming week?
Thank you for listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth, and to provide you with a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. APN promotes the return of our nation to God through preaching, praying, and equipping Christians to reclaim the culture as soldiers and ambassadors of Christ. God hears the calls of His people who learn the truth and obey it. To partner with APN, please visit us on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. You can sign up to receive regular updates, to become a prayer partner, or to help as a financial partner. You may also call us at 610-901-3607. Again, that's 610-901-3607. To listen to any of our Stand in the Gap programs, including our live daily program, go to StandInTheGapRadio.com. That's StandInTheGapRadio.com. Thank you for listening today. And be sure to tune in next week at this same time for Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network. Pastors preaching the truth, equipping their people to impact the culture for Christ.